Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
at an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
And hello, everybody. Happy party. Friday, Chuck Bonnywell, Julie Hayden. Chuck will be here in about 20 minutes. Truth straight up on a gorgeous Friday. Chuck and his merry band of rebels are now touring the eastern and southeastern part of the state, basically talking to all kinds of Republican grassroots groups about changing the way that we have this open primary system. Their point is it's destroying the Colorado Republican Party. They want to go back to having a closed primary. They're fighting an uphill battle, but that's where Chuck is. He's going to be joining us by the phone in about 20 minutes. I got Ben Murray standing by, but before we get to him, I want to also let you know I'm pretty excited about this too. Coming up at 3:30, we're going to be talking to the guys who founded Primary the Ruling Class PAC. And they're basically saying, until we reform the Republican Party and get rid of the globalist and the uniparty people, we're not going to be able to save it. But once we save it, we can save the party, the state, and our country. So we'll be talking to them too. But first, I want to go to Ben Murray with the Independence Institute. He's the director of fiscal policy, has a great column up. I guess, how did you title it, Ben? Governor Unemployment Polis. Thank you for your time on this Friday and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bonnie. Appreciate you having me.
Yeah, that's right. Julie, oh, Bonnie. Sorry. Well, Julie. Yeah, everybody does that. Everybody, even
Chuck, Julie's show.
Sometimes calls me by the name of his former girlfriends too.
Yeah, so. I apologize. I was going through right before this meeting, all the different things I have on my calendar this weekend. I'm actually going to be on with Bonnie too to talk about the same issue, and so it was in my head. I'm sorry.
No worries at all. Well, so you have a great column up. I saw it in Complete Colorado, or it was a link from there. And basically, as the fiscal policy director at the Independence Institute, one of the things you do is keep track of the economy in the state. And what you do, and I'd like you to kind of get into some specifics here, is outline how Colorado went from being really one of the best places for a job in the country to plummeting now. And there are just a whole myriad of reasons, and almost all of them have to do with Polis and the progressive left agenda, right?
That's right, Julie. And I appreciate you having me on the show to talk about this issue, because I think it's something that Coloradans need to be really paying attention to. And I'm thankful for National Review getting this story out
right.
On the level. And that's the way I'll start with how I start off in my piece. And what I did is I did talk about this issue of the equal pay law that Colorado passed in 2019. It went into effect this year. So I'll start there, right?
Okay.
And the impetus for this article was the Wall Street Journal broke a story at the national level that's really a Colorado story. And they said, I'm actually going to look here because I think I have.
No, that's okay.
So their headline was, many companies want remote workers except from Colorado. And they went to explain how, you know, with the pandemic, companies have gotten more accustomed to allowing remote work. So companies are posting new jobs and saying, hey, this is available for remote work. But they're adding these caveats saying, this job is available for remote work except from Colorado.
Wow. And
Coloradans need not apply.
And that's huge when you consider that. And it came from, and I'd like you to explain this, from a law that the kind of thing that sounds like really good on paper and when you only listen to one side of it, but in practice turns out to be a disaster, right?
Well, that's right. And, you know, I one of my favorite expressions is the road to hell is paved with good intentions, which really describes the left. You know, the left asks, actually, I got to give credit to Dennis Prager for this. Dennis Prager says the left asks what feels good. The right asks what does good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this equal, you know, passing a law that's called equal pay for equal work feels really good. But when you ask, well, what does it do? In fact, I'm going to have an article in the Gazette soon. I don't know when exactly it's going to be published, but I'm actually just talking about this equal pay for equal work bill. And, you know, I make that point. I say, I don't exactly know how I worded it in the article, but I kind of make the point that this is intended to help women, but it's going to hurt them.
Right.
Because what it does is instead of creating opportunities for women, it eliminates opportunities altogether for everybody, men and women.
Right.
Coloradans are simply getting excluded from job opportunities altogether. And I make the point in the article, I say, yeah, this is ensuring equal pay of $0 for those Coloradans who aren't going to get a job.
Well, it's exactly. And it seems to me that, and explain maybe how the bill, how the law works, because it seems to me another one of these laws that the left keeps passing that sort of takes out the fact that employers have to make money. And if employers can't make money, then they can't hire employees and no one makes money.
Well, that's right. And so my Gazette article, it kind of starts off talking about the law and it points out, it says, we already have these laws in place. We already have wage discrimination laws in place, multiples of them at the federal level and also at the state level. We had a wage discrimination law. In other words, discriminating on the basis of sex is already illegal in this country at the federal and state level. It's been illegal at the federal level since at least 1963,
yeah,
with the Equal Pay Act, right?
Right.
And so you have to ask yourself, well, why are we passing a law called Equal Pay for Equal Work? And the answer is, and they address it in the bill, they say, we know these laws already exist, but nonetheless, the gender pay gap persists. And so the government needs to intervene to close the gender pay gap. In other words, they're saying it's not enough to outlaw discrimination. We have to intervene in the private economy and ensure the outcomes that we want.
Right.
Right.
And that what they put in some fairly, I guess that maybe I would use the word draconian requirements on employers at that thing, right? I mean, they have to disclose all kinds of stuff. It opens them up to all kinds of lawsuits. I mean, they're absolutely very, very business, yeah, unfriendly.
Very business unfriendly. Like, look, if you're a Colorado business already employing Coloradans, you're stuck. There's not a whole lot you can do. But if you're an outside company and, you know, based out of some other state and you're like, hey, this job is something that people can do from anywhere. Mm-hmm. But then you see this law in Colorado and you realize, well, gosh, I'm going to be subject to all these draconian regulations and I'm going to open myself up to just endless lawsuits and the bill's written such, the way I read it, the bill's really written such that companies are on the hook for proving their innocence if they're
right,
accused of discrimination.
Right.
And they can get fined up to $10,000 per violation for not being in compliance with the law. And so these companies from out of state are going, I don't want to come anywhere near that. Ironically, PETA had two jobs listed that said, don't apply if you're from Colorado. But PETA, yeah, darling of the left, doesn't even want to deal with this leftist policy.
Well, and it seems to be one of the other things it does is, I know there are certain laws, and you have lawyers, and this is what lawyer, no offense, my husband's a lawyer, but lawyers do is, I mean, they look for this to file lawsuits, right?
Oh,
and
lawyers are going to love this bill.
Right. I mean, if you're a company, you're absolutely right. It's like, why even risk it? Okay. So that's just one of the things they've done. But you also talked about how Colorado went from being ranked really pretty high and past, you know, in terms of economic opportunities and things, now plummeting to like 37th as a projection. Let's go through some of the, like you said, the governor unemployment issues here.
Right. So the stat I give in my article is the unemployment rate. In 2017, as recently as 2017, Colorado had the lowest unemployment rate in the nation. Fast forward a little bit, 2019, Governor Polis takes office in January, and now we're 37th in the nation in unemployment, way in the bottom, not even barely in the bottom half. We're way in the bottom half, deep into the bottom half.
Wow.
From number one in 4 years. I mean, think about how rapid that change is, just 4 years of, and how long have, for how many years now has our state been one party controlled?
Yeah. Coincidence. I don't think so.
Coincides pretty closely to me.
Right. Right.
And look, I'm not living in some dream world where a bunch of limited government conservatives or libertarians are going to run the entire government in Colorado. I don't think that's what the people of Colorado want now. Now, maybe 20 years ago, sure, it was a different population, but look, realistically, the mindset of Coloradans, people now living in Colorado on the whole, is probably not my mindset or your mindset. when you factor in the people in Denver and Boulder.
Right. Like, I was going to say, I would push back a little bit on that, I think, because that's what Chuck is finding. I was saying earlier, they're touring the state talking to grassroots Republicans. And there is a huge, talk about a gender gap. There's a huge, massive gap between Denver and Boulder and the rest of the state.
Well, okay.
That's an argument for a whole other time.
If you go outside of Denver and Boulder, sure. Right. But my point is, the state taking it large, look, I'm not sitting here pretending that the whole state, when you include Denver and Boulder, is going to vote for a bunch of limited government people.
Right. Okay.
But I think that if you take the whole state, including Denverites and Boulder people, well, maybe not Boulder, but you know, if you include the entire population, I think if people actually understood what was going on,
right,
they would at least want split government. They would, yes, at least want to not have this one party control where you're passing all these policies just rapid fire, one after another, $600 million in new taxes and fees annually without voter consent, you know, new laws that are keeping employers from even wanting to hire Coloradans at all.
Right.
You know, regulations that are destroying the agricultural industry, destroying the oil and gas industry. I mean, all these things that have taken us from the lowest unemployment in the nation to 37th in just 4 years. I think if people understood this, I really do believe they would at least want split government to kind of check power.
Well, or at least vote. You're right. I mean, just vote for whatever candidate says, regardless of party. We're not going to do this anymore. I mean, I think here's some examples. They have the minimum wage changes. I mean, for whatever reason, employers don't magically have more money to pay. So when you raise things like the minimum wage, the small business employers I know say, I hire fewer people. When you say we have to have this massive, I think it's, what is it, the most lucrative in the country, the family leave policies that we have now, right? If you're, again, if you're an employer, you're like, I can't do that. And I think that they pass these policies. Now, this is my belief, and you can tell me if you disagree, but I think a lot of this, where the Democrats are pretending to care about the average small person, aren't anymore. They're siding with the Amazons. They're siding with the Googles. They're siding with these massive corporations that can go ahead and weather some of these regulations and bureaucracies and fees and rules and regulations. And if you're just the average small business person, you can't.
It's always the case that big business, well, not always, but it's generally the case that big business wants more regulations because it's very simple. I worked in DC for 7 years and I saw it all the time. You know, the big businesses understand that regulations are going to hurt their margins,
right?
Bottom line, it's going to hurt their margins. So their margins are going to go down, but their market share is going to expand because these small businesses are going to go out of business and the big businesses that can handle the regulations are going to swallow up that market share. So right. If your margins go down a little bit, but your market share expands a lot,
right,
by putting your competition out of business, then your revenues are going to go up and your profits are going to go up. And, you know, that, simply put, that's generally why large corporations are very supportive of regulations, of new regulations, that as long as the regulations are going to put out the small business competitors, they're happy with it.
Right, right. But again, and when you look at, I think, the realistically, am I right about this? The average person here works in, and I mean, small businesses really are the backbone, I think, of our economy and our country, right?
Not only that, but small businesses are the path for so many Americans to, I mean, I agree with what you just said, but in addition to that, small businesses are a path for so many Americans to achieve the American dream.
Yes.
You know, to climb that economic ladder and achieve new levels of prosperity that maybe their parents or their grandparents weren't able to enjoy. When you make it impossible, I mean, you if you talk to a lot of wealthy business, successful business owners who began companies in this country that are now large multi-million or multi-billion dollar companies.
Right.
Who started in the 60s or the 70s or the 80s, just in one industry after another, if you ask them, well, do you think you could have started this business if you had to start it today? They'd say, no, absolutely not. There's
right.
no way I could have done it in today's regulatory and tax environment.
Right. And Sandra is saying in small business, exactly, Sandra, and small businesses are a part of the community. That's important. You know, you're absolutely right about that. The big businesses, they may buy the naming rights for a football stadium, but they don't actually really do very much for the community. But the small businesses, they live there. Their kids go to school there. They know. I mean, you're absolutely right about that, Sandra. Go ahead.
I'm not absolutely against big business.
No.
You know, it's fine if a big business is doing well and creating value in the economy and creating jobs, more power to them. But you know, my biggest interest is allowing all companies to compete in a free market,
right?
In a fair and free market where government's not putting their finger, their thumb on the scale for one or the other.
Right. Well, let me ask you about that. So these changes, and you cited in your column, and we've talked about them some here too, some of these laws that have gone into effect that have been passed just very recently, like you said, in the last 4 years, that have completely changed the sort of the employment landscape, and not for the better in Colorado. Now, the Democrats, I got to assume, aren't, well, maybe they are, but I mean, I was going to say aren't idiots, but one never knows. But I mean, I got to assume Jared Polis is a businessman. He knows this. What do you think is going on behind the scenes? I mean, why Jared Polis has got, he can see the numbers just as much as you can, but I don't get the sense he's going, oh my God, we've got to turn this around and we're not going to do this kind of stuff anymore. What's going on here?
Jared Polis knows better.
Yeah.
He's a business guy. He knows Art Laffer personally. And it was my understanding is they know one another, and Art Laffer is a smart guy. I don't know if you know who that is, but
is he like a,
he's an economist who came up with something called the Laffer curve.
Okay.
And the Laffer curve is a mathematical relationship, you know, on a curve,
right,
between taxation and revenue, right?
Right.
And what it shows is that when you reach a certain level of certain tax rate on productivity, right? So certain income tax rate. When you tax income, you're taxing productivity. You're punishing productivity, right? Now, we got to have some kind of taxes to fund government, to fund the basic functions of government. I'm not anti-government. But what Laffer points out is that, this is what he's famous for, is that as you tax more, eventually it curves like this, where you lose a lot of productivity, you discourage productivity for very little revenue gain.
Right.
Right? So if you're taxing businesses at 5% or 10%, you know, it's not really going to affect productivity. So companies are going to bring in just as much revenue if they're or very, maybe just only barely a little bit less, but they're going to bring in more or less about the same amount of revenue as if you didn't tax them at all.
Okay. Right.
It's not going to cause them all. I'm going to tax 5%. I'm just going to shut my doors.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like they're going to do about the same thing they would have done anyways. At 10%, maybe you lose some productivity. At 20%, you tax it maybe 60%, and all of a sudden, a lot of people are like, I'm just not even going to try to start a business.
What's the point?
And you're actually losing revenue because you stunt productivity.
Right.
And that's what Art Laffer is really known for, is this Laffer curve.
Right.
And my understanding is that Polis and Laffer, they know one another, and Polis, you know, Polis should know better, you know?
Right. Go ahead.
And yet he keeps raising taxes.
Yeah.
And he should understand the effect that's going to have on our economy and on jobs and on productivity.
So why do you think, I mean, does Polis, I can't imagine that he sits around and go, I know I want to destroy the economy. I want to be known as a governor. But so why do the Democrats, are they just short-sighted? Do they think that they gain some sort of socialist vote by doing this? And meanwhile, while they destroy the economy, I mean, they think that people aren't going to notice after a while.
Look, I'm obliged to point out that I work for a nonprofit organization, so I'm not anti any particular party. I'm anti bad policies, right? But I think what you're seeing, I'll comment on my perception of the politics of it.
Okay.
My perception of the politics of it right now is that Polis knows better, but he, like Democrats at the national level, he's held captive by the radical progressive left wing of his party right now. If you look at all these bills that are being passed, that are, you know, the most egregious bills, like the paid family leave bill. It sounds so nice,
right,
but I think the largest single, one-off in one piece of legislation, largest tax increase in Colorado history.
Right.
It adds a massive payroll tax that never existed before in Colorado. And it's just going to, it's probably not so much going to, it's not going to destroy jobs as it will just suppress wages.
Right.
Right. Now it can have some of both effects, but the bigger effect it's going to have is suppressing wages because it's a payroll tax.
Right.
So it's a tax on wages.
And if you're a business, like you said, you got to pay more here, you got to make cuts here. And I would argue.
Well, and that's where you cut. If you're a business and you're getting hit with the payroll tax, you're going to cut wages, right?
Right.
You're not going to absorb that cost. You're going to pass that cost on to your employees.
Right. Well, and I would also imagine, and although, I mean, it seems to me that it would also achieve the exact opposite of what it wants to achieve, which would be, you know, equal pay. If you're a pregnant woman, you shouldn't be discriminated against. But I got to wonder, you know, if you're an employer and you're not going to say, oh, I'm not hiring a pregnant woman, but you know, there's a ton of people to choose from for a job. I would think if I were an employer, not only would I think I can't hire as many people if I have to be paying all these higher taxes, mm-hmm. but I would be, I'm sorry, but I would be, that'd be something I take into account when I were looking at an employees, and which it's certainly possible. And I think that's having the exact opposite effect of what they want to have happen.
Well, and people respond to incentives. That's something we know.
Yeah. Good point. Right? Much nicer way to put it. Yes.
People respond to incentives. I don't think it's some elaborate conspiracy to hurt Coloradans or anything, but it's just a lack of understanding apparently from folks on the left in this state that people respond to incentives, that the public policy decisions you make matter and are going to affect the way people behave. You know, we say in public policy, especially in the tax world, if you want more of something, subsidize it. If you want less of something, tax it. Right.
Right.
So if you want less work, make it tax wages. Right. If you want people to have lower wages, tax wages. If you want businesses to not be productive, tax productivity, right? Yeah. It's simple.
Right. Well, let me ask you just a final question, and then I'm going to answer Thomas too, then can get Chuck on the line to talk to my husband and see. But just, so what are you guys doing at the Independence Institute? It seems like a lot of it, you're like, hey, people just, number one, need to know this is going on.
Yeah, that's a lot of it is, you know, I think Governor Polis has been very good at playing both sides.
Yeah.
He's been very good at really, really being at the beck and call of the far left wing progressive, far left wing progressive side of his party. Mm-hmm. That's really where most of his actual action has been. In other words, he's been supportive of their policies. He signed their bills. When they've come out with something really radical, he's at least not opposed it, kind of stayed silent, which is helpful to them. But he does a really good job of pretending to be pro-business.
Yes.
You know, he knows, he's demonstrated that he knows. He's good at talking the talk, but when it comes to his walk, he placates the far left wing of his party. And I think that it's important for Coloradans to see that.
Right.
We're not going to sit back and let, you know, Governor Polis get away with pretending to get away with playing both sides, pretending to be pro-business, pretending to be pro-growth, pretending to be pro-workers, while actually in reality doing all these other things. You know, if you're supporting just a litany of policies that are destroying jobs, dragging down Colorado's economy, stripping people of their liberties,
yeah,
we're not going to let you pretend that you're not being that.
Right, right. Well, so I recommend people, they code your articles up on National Review. You've got one coming up in the Denver Gazette. Is that where people can find any place else people should be looking?
And I think it's actually going to be in the Colorado Springs Gazette.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And it'll be a point counterpoint on this equal pay for equal work.
Okay, cool. All right.
So I'll be writing one. I don't know who's writing the other side of it, but we'll see how that comes out.
Polis. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, all right, Ben. Hey, thank you for your time. Appreciate the work you do explaining this. I think you're right. People need to know. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks so much. There you go. Ben Murray there, the Director of Fiscal Policy at the Independence Institute. Coming up, we're going to have two guys from Primary the Ruling Class, which is one of the ways about reforming. And thank you, Sandra. Good job, like him. And I agree with Sandra. Polis is not stupid. There is something on his agenda and possibly sinister. Don't trust him. I agree. I'll go a little bit further than Ben. I think these Democrats, they know what they're doing. And they don't care. And you got to ask yourselves, why don't they care? And now I'm going to go off my conspiracy cliff. That's because the big tech people, the global international corporations, are not an arm of the Democrat Party. It's the other way around. The Democrat Party anymore is an arm of the Google, the Bezos. I mean, look who's at that billionaire summer camp up there in Sun Valley, right? The only Republican, and this should make you worried, is Nikki Haley. What's she doing there? All of the rest of them are billionaires or Democrats, Anderson Cooper, people like that, you know. And again, they're doing this, I believe, the Democrats are doing this because big tech is telling them to, and they don't care. right? Big tech is going to fund them. They don't care about us pesky little voters. They've got the election issue covered. Zuckerberg, all the stuff that's being revealed now about how he's playing, Facebook is playing politics, openly partisan politics right now. If you're a Democrat, they've like, hey, we got your back. So I'm not even going to worry about that. Hey, Thomas, just because I can't type and talk at the same time. Oh, we got Chuck. So let's go in with, and then we're going to go to Bill and Todd in a second. Before we get to them, let me bring on Chuck. Chuck, why don't you explain to everybody, you left bright and early at dawn this morning.
Yes.
Where are you now, well, and how's it going?
It's going great. I'm in Edad, Colorado, in Kiowa County. It's where the Sand Creek Massacre occurred. Mm-hmm. And I just met with the vice chair and convincing him that we got to take the Republican primaries back for Republicans and not let Catherine Murdoch buy every seat and every squish Republican she can get. So it was a great meeting, and we've got another proponent there, and there are three,
right,
hopefully from Kiowa County, and we're just picking them off a few at a time. We got to get 390, so three less now.
So what you're talking about is you need 390 votes from the Central Committee of
State
the Colorado
Central Committee.
Right. And so
in order to opt out of the open primaries where unaffiliated get to vote. And then the worst part about that is that Catherine Murdoch pours hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars into conservative counties and overwhelms the conservative person with somebody else who then goes down to the legislature and votes with the Democrats.
Right. I mean, and that's a theory. And that's, again, that's why they wanted the open primary. And so I would recommend to people, don't listen. You're going to hear Republicans, some of the establishment guys are going to say things like, oh, well, we won't appeal to the unaffiliated voters. The unaffiliated voters don't vote in the primary anyway. And all they have to do is go to the website, click on, and if they care enough to vote, then they can just click and register, become a Republican, right? And then
right.
vote.
Right.
It's not like it's, you know, it doesn't like take a ton of work or, you know, I mean, it's quicker than a Target run when you get right down to you. You don't have to leave your, you know, getting out of your pajamas. There's no, you know, and so I think it's a great
right.
idea. So Chuck, I'm going to bring on now because I see we have both Todd and Bill, because this ties in almost directly with what you guys are working on. We've got Bill Luznicki, and I apologize, Bill, if I say your name wrong, and then Todd Workman from Primary, the Ruling Class. It's a new pack. You've been at CanUS with Randy. You guys have your own podcast. You are at the Western Conservative Summit. I think we have Todd there. If we've got both of them, just unmute yourself and bring yourself up. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourselves, guys?
I'll go first. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, they can hear you. Uh-huh.
Yeah, my name is Todd, and
okay.
Thanks for having us on. I love doing these. We're a big fan of podcasts. You always get to continue your thought and finish your thought as opposed to having to stop for commercials. So, yeah, we are a grassroots movement. We're membership-based, and my buddy Bill that's on here with us, we started this pack. Bill wrote a book. The name of the book is It's Not About Donkeys and Elephants, Branding the Real Enemy. And out of that, it kind of caused a little stir and a commotion. And out of that, Bill decided to form a super PAC. And that's kind of how we got to where we're at now.
So. Okay. And let me go ahead and I see you too then, Bill. Thank you for joining us. Why don't you explain, what do you mean primary? Because I looked at your website and it's there on your thing there. Everybody check that out because it's great. What do you mean primary the ruling class, Bill?
Well, it's a plan of action. I think, and I appreciate you having us on and everything, but I think a lot of people are frustrated these days. A lot of people know what's going on is not right. A lot of people, you know, they understand that things should be happening differently, but they can't quite put their finger on exactly what it is. And so what we want to do is we want to have a plan of action. We want to give people a release for that frustration. We want to say, okay, we've got an articulate plan. It's spelled out. We are going to go into the primary elections. We are going to target what a lot of people call rhinos. We tend to call it the ruling class because it's more than
right.
just one group of people, right? And what we want to do is target those people. And specifically in the federal primary elections, if we can go in there and take out the people that are supporting some of the leadership that's really behind kind of more of a globalistic, anti-America first type of movement, we can be very strategic about this. And in the primary elections, if we can put the right candidates, get them nominated, I mean, let's face it, there's a whole lot of people that go into the election booth and they pull the lever for R.
Right.
And I get it. I understand it. The Democrat Party's a lost cause right now. It's perfectly understandable. People are busy leading their lives. They're paying attention to their kids, their careers, everything else. They pop their heads up once every 4 years and go to the polls. I understand it, but it's our job, those that do pay attention, it's our job to make sure that we get the right candidates on the ticket to be nominated. And it's going to take organization. It's going to take funding. It's going to take a concerted effort, what we call an intelligent action plan, to make that happen.
All right. And Chuck, and are you still there?
Money, how much money do you hope to raise?
How much money you got?
Right.
Yeah, yeah, not enough.
You know, that's an open-ended question, but you know what? It's a good question, because here's something else people need to understand. The primary elections, the price to play is so much lower than it is in the general elections. Now, that's true whether you're counting votes or whether you're counting money or in dollars. I mean, there are some U.S. congressional elections, some primary elections that have a budget of less than, you know, $50,000 to $100,000. There are Senate elections, one for primary elections, one for far less than $1 million, depending on the race and the situation, of course. But it's far cheaper to play in the primaries, at least at this point in time, than it is a general election.
Well, and you know, and Bill and Todd, that's one of the things that Chuck, you maybe missed a little bit of the intro. He and a group, Colorado has, as you may be aware, an open primary now. And what's happened is the Democrats are changing that money issue. People like Catherine Murdoch, who's very liberal, are pouring millions of dollars into primary races to back what I call fake Republicans. And they're the ones who get, the best way to stop it is to go ahead and lose the open primary. But you're right. I mean, the Democrats they know that people hate them and hate their ideas. So they just spend millions of dollars trying to trick us. And I think places like, you know, organizations like yours and the plan like yours, that's crucial to let people know. It's like, hey, it all starts. I agree with you. It starts with the primary, because we're lost if we keep sending fake Republicans to legislative seats, whether it's city council, school board, or whatever.
Well, we've lost. We're lost, and we've lost as an American people if we keep sending those people back there. And you know, part of with the primaries is you've got to drive massive turnout to the primaries. Yeah. Most people, people that pay attention vote, but a lot of people don't vote in the primaries. They just go vote, like Bill said, and pull the ticket for straight R. But we have got infrastructure in place that we want to drive massive turnout for primary elections. And we've got a service. It's primaryreminder.com. Primaryreminder.com. And you go in there, you sign up for an SMS service with us. You put in your congressional district. We'll send you a couple texts a year, keep you reminded. And what we're going to do is we're going to tell people, this is your America First candidate. This is your establishment candidate. This is the date of your primary, in an effort to push massive people out to the primary, because right now there's nobody doing that. And we kind of hijacked that idea.
Here's the thing. The Democrats are doing it, right? Because I signed up for all those things. The Democrats are doing it. Well, what's your, and Chuck, just chime in here too, because I know you're on the phone. What you talked about, you have a master plan, a strategy plan. Why don't you talk to us about some of the points there?
Sure. I mean, here's the thing. You're not going to go out there, and Chuck asked again a great question a minute ago in regards to money, because let's face it, the bread and butter of politics is money. I wish it wasn't. I hate that, you know, you have to raise money in politics, but it's the truth, and it's kind of naive to think that you don't. So you have to be targeted. You have to be very, very strategic about what you're doing, because we're not going to be able to raise enough money in, what is it, about a year now between when we really get into primary season for the 2022 cycle. We're not going to be able to raise enough money to go after every rhino in every primary election all across the country.
Right.
But what you can do is you can say, okay, look, there are certain, you know, rhinos or ruling class politicians in leadership positions that are only holding those leadership positions because of other congressmen, other senator, other politicians that are there voting for them in their constituency, so to speak, in their committees to prop them up. So if we can specifically target the ones, especially the ones that might be vulnerable, and start eroding away that base of support for the rhino leadership, we can undermine the foundation where the whole house of cards can start to collapse.
Well, that would work perfectly here in Colorado, because, you know, what they had is there's an organization called Liberty Scorecard, and they rate you basically on liberty principles. So the previous minority leader, Patrick Neville, had an A. right? But they worked the primary, got a guy by the name Hugh McCain elected. He's got a D or an F rating there, right? And that it shows up in the agenda that he pushed for the so-called Republican agenda. I mean, so you're absolutely right. I mean, they got rid of, the Democrats worked hard to get rid of Patrick Neville because he was effective as a conservative and a grassroots kind of guy. And like you said, so if you could change the leadership, that would have a huge impact.
Yeah, absolutely. But we've got to take a bite out of it, a bite at a time, right?
Right.
Because like I said, the other side is organized. They have massive amount of funds. You know, yeah, we're just kind of getting that place. That's why we need organizations like ours. We need people like Julie, like you and Chuck, that are doing what you're doing, raising awareness, letting people understand what's going on out there. And PRC is not a one election cycle organization.
Correct.
We are here long term because we understand this is going to be a long term effort. We're going to continue building, continue educating. And the bottom line is, once we get organized, when we awaken the American people, and not just us, but everyone, good people like you and everybody else, when the American people start becoming awake, I mean, there's no more powerful force on the face of the nation. So it's just a matter of taking step at a time. You keep chopping wood, you keep doing what you're doing, and we will get there.
Are you concentrating a primary on the federal level? Is that what I understood you to indicate?
You know, Chuck, it's a great question because our mandate as a political action committee, we have to color between the lines. And our mandate is a federal mandate. We're what's known as an independent expenditures committee or a super PAC in layman terms.
Right.
Now, we're a little bit different. We're not a handful of very rich people throwing a bunch of money into a pot. Instead, we're a whole bunch of, you know, people throwing a little bit into the pot. But but the mandate is still the same. We are restricted to campaigning, what they call federal contributions, to the federal elections. However, that does not mean we can't advocate for and educate for all levels of elections. So it's not probably a simple yes or no answer to that, but we believe very strongly, and Todd can even talk about this. We believe you've got to cut the head off the snake.
Yeah.
I think the Department of Education is a great example. Most of that happens on the local level, on the educational scene, CRT, what's going on the school boards, everything. That's critical. People get involved on the local level. But I'm telling you, if you don't cut the head off the snake, if you don't take the power away from the Federal Board of Education, you know, you're really struggling up against something that's just simply going to replace itself every time you chop down a tree.
And Todd, you had something to say?
Well, really what we think, we're about cutting the head of the snake off at the federal level, yes. But what we really want to do is we want members of PRC to get involved at a local level. We want people to get on the school boards, get on the county commissioner, run for town council, that kind of thing. But we think it's a two-prong approach. You take the head of the snake off, but you have a groundswell from the bottom, which is happening with, you know, parents are fed up with this critical race theory, all the junk around it. They've had it and they're willing to fight back. So we think, you know, we get a massive membership push from PRC, but there's a lot of people outside of PRC that are pushing back. But when you get a group of people that are like-minded and supporting each other and have one mission, when you have 250,000 members, you know, and really if you take 250,000 members at our very lowest membership level, which is 91 cents a day, that's $83 million a month that we will have to impact elections. Think about that, $83 million a month. Okay. That's a lot of money. Okay. So what we want to do is we will pick and target that. There'll be times we'll have to plug our nose and vote for a Republican. We don't want to, because the alternative is you just can't do that. Right. You know, and we understand that, but when you have that kind of money, then we can start using it and picking off people that are susceptible, but we've got to undermine Mitch McConnell's support base. That's what we got to do.
Let me ask you about this, because I'm assuming that the establishment Republicans in Colorado and around the country are embracing you wholeheartedly, saying that primaries are important. Or are they saying, no, you in Colorado, we get told this, you must hold your nose and vote for our anointed one, even though you all hate him. I mean, you're fighting the war on two fronts, I would imagine. You got a bunch of snake heads to chop off.
Yeah, we Julie, did. You know, that's been the establishment strategy forever, is they come at you and say, you know, he may not be a perfect candidate and this incumbent may not be your ideal, but you got to vote for him because he's electable. We've got to run people that are electable. All you American First people out there that don't have a background in politics and don't have name recognition, you know, you don't stand a chance. You're just going to hand the office over to the Democrats. You know, it's bunk.
Bunk. It is
90% of the time, it's absolute bunk. And it's an excuse to keep good people from getting into office and to protect that establishment base. So yes, we face that head on, and we're not bashful about letting our feelings be known.
Chuck, you were going to say something?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I'm on the executive committee of the State Central Committee, and we have bylaws where I'm prohibited, just like Randy Corcoran, from endorsing or backing people in primaries. But that's why we need organizations like yourself,
right,
to do all that hard work and are not limited or restricted or somehow prohibited from endorsing and helping people with an American First agenda.
You know, and I really appreciate hearing you say that, Chuck, because I do understand your position. I respect it, just like I respect Randy's. But I also know this. I know there's all kinds of people across the country, the conservatives, Republicans, even people that maybe have left the Republican Party, they feel the same way. They know that change is needed. They know that reform is needed. And it's not going to happen from the top down. It's going to have to happen like people like us stepping up and coming together, organizing and doing something about it. And, you know, one of the things, if I could be permitted to,
sure,
to just take the time, we are a membership organization. People can go to primarytherulingclass.com. They can check us out if they're so inclined. They can join us. Like Todd said, the dues, the donations are very minimal in most cases. You can pick pick your poison, so to speak, or pick the level of support that you feel comfortable with. But here's the message I want to give people. If you're not organizing and joining us, then do something.
Yeah.
Don't just vent on Facebook, right? Don't just go out there and talk about it. Please, please, please do something, because I feel like we're being called right now. We're not asking anybody to give up their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. It's not got to that point, but we are asking everybody to answer the call and do something. We think it's critical. We think the time is critical, and we just want to be very, very clear about that.
Well, and I think what you guys do, and I agree with you too, and I'll go ahead and primarytherulingclass.com. And I also encourage, point folks out, you can help, you know, become a patron of the Chuck and Julie Show. Go to bbsradio.com and find the two, because as you said, you hate to talk about money, but it's not free. And right, the other side is doing everything they can to shut us down. And they have all the money in the world, right? They have, you know, billionaire summer camp going on now at Sun Valley, where they're plotting our destruction, I believe.
Right.
And I think it's a crucial time because, you know, my daughter, she's a Democrat, right? But she quits talking to us because she's like, every time I talk to you, you guys are right. And she's like, you know, you're changing my mind. But she said, there's no difference between the parties. So what difference does it make? And to a great extent, she's right about that with some of the establishment candidates, the ruling class candidates. But when you guys get out there, and if we can identify and support and help get elected people who do make a difference, I think there are a ton of people, these so-called unaffiliated voters, who would vote for those kind of candidates who just are like, hey, they're all bad right now. So what difference does it make?
No, I think you're absolutely right. Robert
makes all the difference in the world.
Right.
One Marjorie Greene makes all the difference in the world. One, you can pick out others. One Jim Jordan makes all the difference in the world. And one more, Devin Nunes. So it really is critical that you get people like that, rather than, as you guys have identified, somebody who says, well, he may not be my cup of tea, I may not like him, and he may vote with the Democrats 30% of the time, but I'll just have to accept him. A few brave people make all the difference in elective office.
And they're becoming more vocal. And what we got to do is we got to get 10 more people like that elected to federal offices, because with 10 more voices, they're going to be, I mean, anytime you got 10 more people that agree with you, you're going to be out more outspoken about it. It doesn't matter if it's politics,
right,
or whatever it is. If you got,
right,
if you know you got 10 people that think like you do, you're going to be more inclined to speak up and say, ain't that right?
Right, right.
Julie,
well,
right,
I think
that's the way it is.
And Chuck, you've noticed too. I mean, people are mad out there. People feel, yes, like both parties are ignoring. I mean, you just look at what's happened to gasoline prices. You know, I don't care what party you're in. It's like people feel that. And if you have a candidate who could say things like, you know, I'm going to get the bureaucrats and the progressive socialists out of the classroom, unless you want to send your kid to a school that teaches that, you know, we're going to bring the gas prices down, we're going to bring jobs back, et cetera, I think people would be like, hey, I might vote for that person. You just need to have somebody who follows up and does what they say they're going to do.
Yeah, sure. I sure could go for like $2.50 gas and a real mean tweet from the president about right now, huh?
Right, right. Here, this is from Leo. It's from Charlene. She says exactly the head of the snake. She said the Colorado GOP, I agree with her here, is snipping around the tail. The watered down theory doesn't work anymore. And then Leo is saying, you know, the problem is to get rid of McConnell, you need to lose a seat for one term to get them out. Then you come back with someone good. What do you think about that?
I don't think it's necessary to lose the seat. I really don't. I think these guys are being propped up. Here's what's going to happen. If we do this right, you're talking about the strategy and the plan. Right. This is, you know, we don't have a crystal ball, but this is kind of what we're thinking here. Imagine the United States Senate where Mitch McConnell loses 4, 5, or 6 of his buddy senators that always vote for him to put him as a majority leader. Now, so he loses the leadership. We didn't defeat him in the primary. He's going to resign, Julie. He's not going to stay in the Senate if he's not the leader.
Right.
So there's a way to whittle away at this where you don't have to hand the whole thing over to the Democrats.
Right, right. No, that makes a lot of sense. Well, the only reason he's there in the first place is because as the leader, he makes a ton of money handing out committee assignments. He has a ton of power, et cetera, et cetera. But like Chuck said, you get some Jim Jordans in there, you get some of the people like that, you know, but again, you're fighting, you know, massive. Sandra saying, didn't I say Nikki Haley is with the big leftist corporation giants in Sun Valley? Right. She is. And we need to get her out and the rest of the GOP. It's like, what is somebody like Nikki Haley even doing there? She should be talking to them. She should be saying to them, look, we're going to dismantle you. You can't censor the president. You can't censor conservative thought. My guess is she's not saying that. So I'm guessing that you would not support her in a primary.
You are correct. We would not support Nikki Haley in a primary.
Do you have any candidates you are supporting at this point?
Well, we will be vocal about the ones we're supporting, but there's still a lot of them that got to poke their heads up yet. I think we still got some people that are maybe getting poked. Hey, you guys need to get your name in that, or throw your name in there and see what happens. But there's a lot of people that I think are on the fringes that are starting to come to light. We've kind of identified some. I don't know really if you'd say we've completely jumped through support behind any one candidate right now. We have some that we like, but the reality of it is most people in the Republican Party cannot name who the real enemy is. And they instantly go to, it's the Democrats. Okay, fine. We understand that the Democrats got problems and they're a lost cause to most Americans right now. But the reality of it is, in my mind, what upsets me more than the Democrats, I mean, you know where a Democrat stands on most social issues, economic issues. That's not a surprise. What angers me is when you elect a Republican who you expect to stand for what we believe in, what the Republican Party stands for, and they go and vote with the Democrats, or even worse than that is not say anything, swap a vote here or there and let it go on and turn a blind eye to it. That is what I cannot stand. That's what we are wanting to expose is, hey, just because they have a Republican behind their name, guess what? They're not doing what you want.
Right.
That's the problem. It's not the Democrats. It's the sneaky Republicans that are partnered up with the other globalist Democrats.
Well, and it's groups like yours and in this other group, we've talked to Susan Moore from Liberty Scorecard, places like that where they just keep a scorecard, right? And they're like, here are the principles that we judge people on, and here's their voting record. I think it's that kind of stuff. I mean, to get the information out too about, well, how do people know? Because how are you guys going to vet people? Or do you have a plan for that?
We have a philosophy.
Okay.
And I'm not against the groups that keep scorecards. So please do not misunderstand what I'm ready to say.
Okay.
But the problem is these politicians are pretty sophisticated. They know how to trade votes. They know how to go in and give each other cover. They know how to do these things. So in my opinion, I think a scorecard is valuable, but I think you have to go way beyond that. And so rather than give you a specific point by point criteria, I'm just going to make it very succinct and tell you we have a philosophy that says behavior never lies. So we don't care what people say. We don't care what they're talking about. We care about is what they do or what they don't do. So when they stay quiet, when certain issues important to the American people come up and they don't support the people that are speaking out, the true conservatives trying to fight back, that tells us as much as if they were being vocal against us. So those are the things we watch. Those are the things we monitor. And again, because we are trying to be strategic, we don't feel the pressure, at least at this point, to have to make a scorecard on every single politician.
Right.
We're looking for key races here and there, key offices here and there, key candidates here and there, key office holders here and there to help pull apart the foundation of this ruling class base. So if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. Well, and I think it's a good strategy. And Chuck, then you can comment your way in too, that you're, like you said, don't target Mitch McConnell. Target some of the other races that will eliminate Mitch McConnell's base of support. And then he'll just go away himself. You know, you chopped his head off without having to actually do battle with him. Now, he's not going to sit around and watch that happen silently. But by the same token, though, I think if you start putting up fights, you don't need to win off 50 seats or 51 seats. You just need to win a few. And that makes a lot of sense.
A few a year, you know, make a big difference. Sure.
And as a practical matter, Trump is also out there trying to get America First conservatives elected, including in places like Wyoming and elsewhere. So I assume that your efforts in most cases will be synergetic with his and many of his endorsements anyway.
Many of them we will probably agree with, I would say. The thing that we have to do is part of our what primary's ruling class goal is, we just have to educate people.
Yeah.
Because it's really not about donkeys and elephants. That's Bill's book is exactly right. It's not. They want you to say, look at what the Democrats are doing. Look at what the Democrats are doing. Look at what they're doing. They're bad, bad, bad. But really what it's about is, what are you doing?
Right. Right.
I want to know what you're doing.
Right. Well, guys, one more time then, because we're starting to run out of time here. Should people go? Where can they find out more about you? How can they sign up for your texts, et cetera?
They can go to primarytherulingclass.com. That is the main website. They can access everything there. If they'd like to directly sign up into the opt-in SMS text primary reminder service, they can simply go to primaryreminder.com. But primarytherulingclass.com is where everything starts. And we sure appreciate you folks. I mean, I'm telling you, Julie, Chuck, you guys are awesome. What you're doing is so incredibly important.
Very important.
We need tons of people like you, tons of patriots all across the country, because I talked about being called earlier. Just let me say this. It is in times of crisis when heroes are born. And we're seeing a lot of heroes like yourselves pop up right now. And that's an open invitation for more, for everybody else that wants to stand up and be counted right now. So thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to your audience. And we very much appreciate you.
Hey, and feel free. Keep in touch.
Thank you very
much
for coming on and fighting the good fight.
Yep, you bet. We're here, and I'm sure we'll meet again. I'm excited to what kind of relationship grows out of this. So,
all right, perfect.
Thanks for having us on.
All right, thanks, you guys.
All right.
Bill and Todd there with Primary the Ruling Class. Check it out. I went to their website. It's a pretty darn impressive website, primarytherulingclass.com. Hey, from Sandra, great. They love you. Our audience loves you guys, so thank you. Thank you for that. Well, Chuck, with a couple of minutes left, do you want to kind of explain to folks now where you're going and what you've got going on too for the rest of the, because you come home.
We're going to Lamar, which is in Broward County, which is near Kansas. And we've got a big dinner tonight, hoping to have 60 or more people, 60, 70 people, to evangelize, making the Republican Party a Republican party. And not really just a Democratic light party. And it's you know, we've got the establishment against us, as establishment is always against
anyone who wants to take some of their power.
Answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you know, they think exactly as those two guys articulated, great. You know, you just talk to everybody how you're going to help get things done by cooperating with the Dems. And make sure that all their programs get approved.
Our consultants. Yeah, their consultants need to make more money. And I'm going to say, because we're running out of time, I mean, really and truly, it's you, it's Ben Nicholas and Neil Mathai, Jimmy Mack, Peg Cage, anyone else I've missed there.
Joe Spangle has now joined our Merry Warriors. We're growing.
Well, and here's the thing. You guys aren't like, you know, putting up fancy schmancy websites that you hope people stumble across. I mean, I don't know how many seasons.
Yes, we are. Yes,
well, you have that. But what I mean though is you guys are taking
it. We have a fancy schmancy website.
But you're not leaving it there, I guess, is where I'm going. I just am saying as your wife and sort of as just as a, grassroots person. I'm just really proud of you guys because you're, I mean, you know, you've hit, I don't know how many dozens of cities you guys have visited, dozens of grassroots groups, whether there's two people there or 100 people there. You guys have been, you've toured the state. I mean, you've, you know, you've traveled further, yeah. I think, than Michael Bennett or John Hickenlooper certainly have, to see what people think and find out what's going on. So you guys are doing just a great job, yeah, there,
as
Chuck.
Somebody said, it feels like a running for governor, but we're not.
All right. Hey, listen, that's going to wrap it up for us, Chuck. Hey, we'll see you later. Tell everybody their thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you to our great guests. Thank you for everybody listening. Remember, you can catch all our shows at chuckandjulie.com. Or if you like, just go to the bbsradio.com site. You can find us there too. Happy Party Friday. I think, Cleo, hopefully this was an upbeat one for you guys. We thank you to Thomas and everyone at BBS. We will see you all on Monday. Have a great weekend.